BuzzFeed crunched the numbers last week. It found that the 50 most viral fake news stories of 2017 generated more total shares, reactions, and comments than the top 50 fake stories of 2016. Say that another way, viral fake news generated more engagement on Facebook in 2017 than in 2016. Facebook remains the warehouse for viral hoaxes. This hour, a look inside the world of fact-checking, what it is and what we can learn from it. It's The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Our guests with us, Alexius Manzarlis is director of Poynter Institute's International Fact-Checking Network. He's helped found International Fact-Checking Day. Alexius, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Daniel Funke is a fact-checking reporter at Poynter, where he covers fact-checking, misinformation, and fake news. Daniel, welcome to you.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, Alexius, let's start with you. Can you quickly give a definition, give a framework for what fact-checking journalism is, what it does for us?
Sure. And I should say this has evolved, right? For most of American journalism's history, fact-checking was the stuff that happened before the publication of articles on established media outlets. As the news became more and more in the hands of everyone, and cutbacks to staff meant that fact-checking departments got torn down or removed altogether, fact-checking became an ex post act of verifying the truthfulness of claims made by public figures. And increasingly over the past 2 years, the truthfulness of the information that we see online that has gone viral without necessarily having been verified by anyone.
Daniel, how do you see fact-checking different from our journalism and what we're reading and seeing and hearing in the news?
To me, the value of fact-checking is its simplicity, right? It cuts away the commentary that every other news article has. So fact-checking is valuable both to audiences and journalists themselves because it really takes a claim and dedicates an entire article to it. It's really transparent. It shows all its sources at the end. And it's just a really good way to keep politicians accountable. And I think something we saw in 2017 is even a shift from just covering politicians and campaigning toward covering fake news and misinformation online in a way that we really haven't seen before, at least in the United States.
Well, fake news and misinformation, as I was leading into our conversation here, BuzzFeed looked at the numbers, found 50 most viral fake news stories of 2017 generated more total shares, reactions, and comments than they did in 2016. Alexius, what do you make of that? What's going on here?
Yeah, that's a very concerning stat. And I think part of the challenge with really figuring out what was going on is that Facebook has been reticent to share any real figures from its fact-checking efforts over the past year. So at the end of 2016, it partnered with several fact-checkers in four countries under the aegis of the organization I lead. And yet we don't know what kind of effect that effort has had on the fake news that they've been flagging. These engagement numbers are concerning, but we can't tell whether there's no counterfactual, right? So without this flagging mechanism, would they have been even higher? We don't know. And so it is to everyone's, it would be to everyone's advantage if Facebook was more open about what it knows about how people are reacting to fact-checking on Facebook and how much their current efforts are effective at combating fake news.
Daniel, is there an appetite from Americans for fact-checking, or do they feel it has a partisan spin to it?
You know, I think there is an appetite among Americans for fact-checking. Consistently, when you look at polls of media favorability, people cite the media's tendency to spin facts or that perception as a reason that they don't really believe the media. And fact-checking is valuable because it doesn't really offer a lot of commentary most of the time. It gives you a claim, and then it shows you exactly what its sources are, and then it reaches a conclusion. And then any casts of partisanship usually have to do with how many fact checks that a fact-checking outlet has against a certain politician or a certain party. So a lot of the criticism that's waged against PolitiFact, for example, which is one of the biggest fact-checking organizations in the world, comes from establishment Republicans that have been in power in Congress, and, you know, fact-checkers just have to cover them more. So perception of partisanship, you know, it's a real challenge, but I think people do really want that simplistic journalism that holds people accountable and doesn't, you know, offer commentary that's not always needed.
I can add, if you don't mind, a couple more numbers as well. When asked, Americans always say they want more fact-checking. So last year or the year before, Pew asked, and 80% of Americans said they expected the media to be fact-checking the campaigns or political candidates. 60% told the Monmouth Research Center that they wanted debate moderators to fact-check the debate. That didn't happen. Snopes, that was looking for sort of help as it went through an ownership struggle, raised $500,000 in one day from its readers and users. There is enormous appetite for fact-checking. There is enormous appetite for a type of journalism that helps you sort through fact and fiction.
We're lifting the veil this hour on fact-checking, how it's done, how journalists do it. Alexius Manzarlis and Daniel Funke are with us. Alexius is the director of Poynter's International Fact-Checking Network, and Daniel is a fact-checking reporter at Poynter. You can join in the conversation and ask your questions about fact-checking, 800-642-1234. Has a fact-checking story ever made you change your mind about something? Have you paid more attention to fact-checking in the past few years? Join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. You can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Alexius, fact-checking has become much more common, it seems, these days because the world is so politicized. Recalling White House counsel Kellyanne Conway famously used the phrase alternative facts and post-truth, major buzzwords of 2017. But it goes beyond that. Conservative news sites accuse fact-checkers of being biased and politically motivated. So can you talk a bit about how facts and fact-checking have become so politicized, and why can't facts be extracted from politics?
Yeah, and this is an enormous concern, right? The whole purpose behind fact-checking when it first launched for the digital age in the early aughts was to help both sides find sort of a common factual ground. And then, you know, fight over policy alternatives, fight over what matters the most. But what happened over the past couple of years has been, on one hand, a concerted attack on fact-checkers. That is not new. Politicians have been skewering fact-checkers anytime they find them wrong, only to cite them favorably when, of course, they find them right. And this has happened with Trump himself, too. On the one hand, he attacked fact-checkers and called them, quote, scum. But then during a debate, so in front of a very large audience, he said he was honored that the fact checkers found one of his claims to be true. Now, what I think happened specifically since 2015 and 16 is that a lot more fact checking was done, and I don't think that all of it was of a particularly high quality. I think Trump's hyperbolic communication style allowed and attracted journalists to do more fact-checking and to do it sometimes on claims that really didn't deserve it. When Trump said that Obama founded ISIS, or that Hillary Clinton literally bleached her emails, or when Tim Kaine claimed that Trump had a personal Mount Rushmore of dictators, we really didn't need fact checks of those claims. These are absurd claims, and I think we need to stick to fact checking important issues. The other thing I'd note is that as the relationship became more and more adversarial, journalists let themselves be dragged into the pit and become adversaries. And that's not, if it becomes a question of us, where us is any kind of political group versus them, the media has no chance of winning. The question for journalists and for fact checkers especially, or the role for fact checkers, is to be advocates for voters, not take any kind of side.
Daniel, do you see yourself as finding an elevated level of fact-checking, taking the high road, just focusing on the information?
I'm not sure I totally understand the question. I mostly focus on reporting on the fact checkers and the fact checking organizations themselves. So I guess in that way, I do get to see the best work that people are doing and what people are trying to do to fight misinformation. But I don't really see myself as taking a high road or anything like that. I kind of see myself as almost like a watchdog for the fact checkers and a person who wants to just let the media world know what they're doing.
The Washington Post called it a banner year for the fact checker. The paper's top four fact checks were about President Trump. In the mix of fact checks on specific claims include the president's continued claim that Russian tampering in the 2016 election was fake news created by Democrats. We're exploring how fact-checking is done this hour with Alexius Manzarlis and Daniel Funke. Manzarlis is director of Pointer's International Fact-Checking Network, and Daniel Funke is a fact-checking reporter at Pointer Institute. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you paid more attention to fact-checking in recent times? Tell us about it. We'll return after a news update. Technology is entering the world of fact-checking in a big way. There is beta testing of a new live pop-up automated fact-checking during the State of the Union address on January 30th. This is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're learning about human fact-checking and the dawn of computerized fact-checking with Alexius Manzarlis and Daniel Funke. Alexius is the director of Pointer's International Fact-Checking Network, and Daniel is a fact-checking reporter at Pointer. You can enter into this conversation at 800-642-1234. Do you think fact-checking is a fair practice, or is it telling little white lies just to take part of politics? Do you think fact-checking is nonpartisan? You can also tweet us at WPR Mornings. Daniel, how is technology impacting fact-checking in the realm of this near real-time fact-checking that can take place now through technology?
Yeah, I think it presents a lot of exciting new frontiers. I think there's still a lot people have to work out. So the Duke co-op at the Duke Reporters Lab, they're working on a just like you mentioned, a real-time fact-checking mechanism for the State of the Union address. They're going to have an app that people can use and follow fact-checkers in real time. So that's one exciting development. Over the across the pond in London, Full Fact is working on an automated platform to help fact-checkers do their work better by identifying claims across several different fields. It could be from the BBC, it could be from the House of Commons, and then it'll automatically identify claims and check them in the right-hand side if there is a fact-check in the database that they have. So a lot of the automated technology that we're looking at right now is really aimed at improving fact-checkers' work. I want to be clear and say that, you know, this technology isn't going to replace human fact checkers. I think we'll always need human fact checkers, but it is going to, in the near future, help them do their work better, hopefully.
Alexius, do you see technology helping fact checking across the world?
Yeah, it's got to. I mean, the aphorism often wrongly attributed to Mark Twain said that a lie goes halfway around the world in the time the truth puts its pants on. And I think that's very much the case in the internet age, right? It takes no time whatsoever to share a misleading or false tweet with a doctored picture. It can take hours or even days to fact check it. And so unless we really strengthen the capacity of fact checkers to act fast, we are always going to be waging a losing battle. I don't see the thing. There's a lot of techno-utopianism out there. I don't see any foreseeable future in which fact checking will be entirely automated. Here we're talking about accelerating particular steps of fact-checking and more easily making already published fact-checks available that are still important wins, but we're not just yet seeing the dawn of the robot fact-checker.
And Pointer wrote this year that we'll probably get more data on the impact of fact-checking and fake news. How could that data help inform other fact-checking journalists do their jobs?
Yeah, I mean, and for one, that data has already started trickling out. Research from Brandon Nyhan and others published on January 3rd found that the most avid consumers of fake news were also voracious consumers of real news. And so I think we need to sort of understand what makes people who are eager to read misinformation also ready to read our content, and perhaps sort of survey those readers to understand how to make our fact checks more effective.
Daniel, how do you see readers and viewers approaching the work you're doing? How is it being received?
Yeah, so the work that I'm specifically doing has been received pretty well. You know, I try to highlight the best work of the fact-checking community and some interesting developments in the field. So I spend a lot of my time talking to different fact-checkers around the world, tech companies, and other journalists. And it's been pretty well received so far. I think there is a hunger to know what is going on in this field. It is, you know, fact-checking is something that, to the outside, even in the own, like, media community, is pretty obtuse. And I think that is also kind of a source where it gets a lot of criticism, because it seems like this high-level, highbrow political journalism that at its core is all about checking claims and determining, you know, if they're true or false. So my work has been pretty well received, mostly, I think, because my audience is fact checkers and other media types. So they like to learn about this kind of stuff. It's kind of a wonky field of journalism to be in. But I've also, on the other hand, had interest from people who aren't in the media. You know, I think people have heard the term fake news, whether or not that's been politicized. They've heard, I think people across this country know what that term means, and it interests them, and they want to know who the people behind fake news are. So, yeah.
Daniel, lift the veil, if you would, and walk us through a fact-checking exercise, something that you fact-checked this year or in 2017. Walk us through from start to finish how that went and how you arrived at the conclusion.
Yeah, so I don't actually do a lot of regular fact-checking. I mostly cover what the fact-checkers are doing themselves. Mm-hmm. But I did, after, I think you'll remember, a couple of weeks ago, Donald Trump retweeted a couple of anti-Muslim videos that a far-right leader in the UK tweeted out. And that got a lot of attention on Twitter and in mainstream media outlets for, you know, just how blatant the Islamophobia was and why the president of the country is retweeting that kind of stuff. So, and initially, it was all just kind of like a lot of rancor about why he would do this, and then it quickly dissolved into, oh, these videos are fake, and I really wanted to check whether or not they were fake, where they came from, that kind of stuff. So first, I used a tool called NVID, and it analyzes social media videos and videos elsewhere frame by frame, and then I searched each one of those frames through Google reverse image search and a 10-eye search, and that uncovers where those frames are on the internet. And I finally tracked each one of, I think it was three videos, each one of those videos down to their original source. In each case, they were misconstrued contextually. I think one of them maybe was false. So I'll have to go back and read it later. But most of them were misconstrued in their context. So not a lot of them were fake, but that was an instance in which I really took something that was, you know, trending in the news and kind of tried to give a little more perspective to it.
And multiple layers of technology playing into what you're trying to do there.
Yeah, it's almost like I like to explain it to my parents and others, like, as being Sherlock Holmes on the internet. There's all these different like tools you have that you try to really uncover where this one nugget of misinformation came from. So a lot of the times it starts with a media element or a story, and then there are this huge list of tools that I have that I try to check where that is found on the internet. And it's, you know, it's digital forensics sounds like a really hard thing to do, and some days it is, but a lot of the times you can find most of this junk pretty quickly and debunk it or verify it.
Digital forensics on this hour of the morning show. Let's go to Bill in Spooner with your question. Hi, Bill. Go ahead.
Good morning. Interesting program, and thanks for talking about it. Historically, the United States media of 17th, 18th, 19th century was not mass media. It was partisan, and much of it was fake by today's standards. Then the 20th century became possible for mass media to make money with facts and in the center. Do you see, I guess, historical perspective from your guests on that, and if they have a projection of when it will become more profitable to be in the center than playing to the fringes.
Bill, thanks for the call. It was breaking up a little bit, but we're looking for a historical perspective on when we might transition back to mainstream media and fact-checking. Kind of hard to parse there. Alexius, I'll start with you.
Yeah, I mean, this is Bill makes an excellent point. The penny papers were rubbish, right? They faked the moon landing, right? In the 1800s, there were not a moon landing, excuse me. Moon people were apparently all over the. So this has been a relatively fact-based, a reality-based press has been a more recent iteration of American journalism, for sure. And I think Bill, again, hits on another issue, which is it needs to be profitable, right? It needs to actually have an audience and a market. And I think what we're seeing over the past 2 years is that audiences and the public are realizing that, right? We're seeing subscriptions boom. We're seeing crowdfunding campaigns do great. We're seeing a whole new surge, and I'm sure it's been the case on Wisconsin Public Radio as well, of people realizing that we do need trusted information and that trusted information doesn't come for free. And so I think I'm an optimist, so I think hopefully we're either at the bottom and looking up or near the bottom and getting there. And I think ultimately factual information will have a definite place in the media ecosystem.
Daniel, as you look at the history of news and from penny papers to the present, how do you see the role of fact checking, and will it help guide the future?
Yeah, I see the role of fact-checking mostly as a standout area where I think that what Bill was talking about when he was talking about making the center profitable again, I see them as a model, right? I think the press could learn a lot from fact-checkers and what they do every single day, both in process and mission. I think the press kind of needs a redefinition of, you know, who is their audience? Who are they serving? And how can they do their jobs better? And I think fact-checkers are a really good framework for figuring that out. Fact-checkers, by their nature, are very, very meticulous. They start with very basic claims. They go through a lot of different sources. They force themselves to talk to whoever they need to talk to get to the conclusion. And, you know, that is when people think of journalists, I think they think of that process, but that's not always the case. There's, you know, people writing clickbait for websites now and all this kind of other stuff. So I think fact checkers could almost serve as a framework for going back to what Bill said and making journalism that really relies on objective facts profitable again. But I think another important point here is to remember that fake news isn't a new phenomenon, right? It's been going on for hundreds and hundreds of years. People have always falsified news to achieve some kind of political or economic goal. But the thing that's new here is that these complex technologies and social media networks are being gamed by, whether it's all the way high up as the Russian government or some dude in his apartment in Phoenix, Arizona, creating false stories either to make money or to affect political outcomes. So I think we have to keep that in mind, that fake news, although it's like a buzz term, it's always been around. It's just, you know, more amplified today.
Talking right now with Alexius Manzarlis and Daniel Funke. Daniel is a fact-checking reporter at Pointer, and Alexius is director of Pointer's International Fact-Checking Network. You can join with your questions about fact-checking, where you see it in society today, 800-642-1234. You can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. I want to ask each of you this question. What do you think were the most influential fact checks in 2017 and why? Alexius, let's start with you.
Yeah, I mean, I think the whole corpus of Trump fact checks has to sort of win as a whole, because there has been an understanding that the president is sort of paradigmatically new in the level in which he twists facts and also like sort of flip-flops on them without really seeming to care. One that stood out to me has been the fact checks of whether President Obama had wiretapped the Trump campaign and Trump personally last year or the year before. And, you know, there was nothing there, really. And then when pressed in an interview by John Dickerson about whether he stood by this claim, the president famously sort of ummed and ahed, said he never stands by it, wouldn't stand by it, everyone can make his opinion, and then shut the interview down. So I think we saw there the power of a sort of pushing on a false factual claim to really shine the light on someone who is distorting the truth and doesn't actually have the evidence to back it up.
Daniel, what do you see as the incredible fact checks of 2017?
You know, it's hard to pick just one. There were a lot. I agree with Alexius that the Trump brand of fact check was obviously probably the most impactful this year, just given the scope of the falsities that the president has dispersed over the past year. I did a quick search using one of my digital tools before the show and found some of the most popular fact checks of the year. One of them, several of them were from PolitiFact. One of them, most of them were early on in the year. One was about the inaugural crowd size. And I think everyone remembers that weird week in January where the administration claimed that the inauguration was the biggest in U.S. history and all this other kind of stuff. And I think what really stands out for me about this fact check from PolitiFact, which shows that the metrics, you know, clearly show that he didn't have not even the biggest in recent years.
And Americans got into it by looking very closely at these aerial pictures, these aerial views of the crowd, and they were weighing in with their insights.
Exactly. Yeah, it was almost like this mass exercise in fact checking, but it was literally just like two photos juxtaposed. And I think what stands out to me about this fact check is that it's multi-layered. Like, it starts from this very basic claim, like, is it the biggest crowd size or not? And then it kind of devolves along Spicer's logic lines. Like, then he says,
Sean,
oh, well,
Spicer.
Yes, Sean Spicer. And it shows that he said, like, oh, it's because of the lawn coverings. And then PolitiFact debunked that. And then it says, oh, it's because of the x-rays. And then PolitiFact debunked that. So it's almost like you're following along as it's almost putting the readers inside the press briefing room, which I think was really valuable early on. And just some other ones, you know, PolitiFact shows the Trump's statement that the Russian election interference story is made up as their lie of the year this year. I think you mentioned that earlier on the show. And that also stands out to me as a fact check that really reveals the brand of claims that this administration makes. And I think a specific point that Angie Holland makes that's really important is that Trump could have, you know, sworn off Russian interference in our election without conferring guilt upon himself, but he didn't do that. He still says that, you know, this story is made up, it's fake news, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, even though there's an overwhelming amount of evidence that show, yes, Russian actors did interfere in our election, at least in some capacity. Whether or not that influenced the vote, probably not at this point, but it's not impossible. But irregardless, you can just say, yeah, I don't approve of any Russian interference, but he doesn't. So that's an important fact check to me, too. Some other ones from the Washington Post fact checker, they've been keeping track of all of President Trump's false claims, which has been interesting to follow, and also some dogged work on their part. And then you go ahead.
I was going to say, and we will be following your work, and I want to thank you both so much for being with us.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks so much. Have a nice morning.
You too. Alexius Manzarlis and Daniel Funky. Alexius is the director of Poynter International's fact-checking network. Daniel Funky is a fact-checking reporter at Poynter, where he covers fact-checking, misinformation, and fake news. After a news update, we'll have a conversation with Angie Holland, editor at the fact-checking organization PolitiFact, to take a look at fact-checking behind the scenes and your questions at 800-642-1234. What do you think about fact-checking in America? Is there a place for it? Join in at 800-642-1234. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. We're talking about fact-checking on this hour of the morning show. Thanks for being here. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. quoting from Breitbart News this week, quote, "It is important to hold Trump accountable for what he says, but what the media fail to understand is that reciting lists of Trump falsehoods misses the point. Politicians stretch the truth. Trump is not the first or even the worst. He is guilty of bluster, but not fraud." Words of Joel Pollack, a senior editor at large at Breitbart News. Let's bring in Angie Holin, editor of PolitiFact, a fact-checking news organization operated by the Tampa Bay Times. Angie, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, I just read this quote by Breitbart News this week that we can hold President Trump accountable for what he says, but the media is missing the point by really fact-checking here, by going through layer for layer of what these tweets are saying and what comes out of the president's mouth. How would you respond to that?
Well, I think that's just basically wrong. It's part of journalists' duty to fact-check all elected officials. And when the president, who is arguably the most powerful person in the United States, says things that are factually incorrect, I think the record needs to be set straight just for basic factuality. So that's the first thing I would say. The second thing I would say is, obviously, I have not fact-checked every president we've ever had, but we've been fact-checking for 10 years now, and Donald Trump is in a category of his own as far as repeated misstatements over and over again. So I would also argue against the idea that he's just like every other politician, a little blustery. That's not the case. He says things that are totally contradicted by facts. And for an example, his repeated claims that there is substantial voter fraud and millions of people voting fraudulently. That's not true. And elected officials who are Democrats and Republicans all over the country have refuted that. So we have to live in a world where we deal with facts and evidence, and there's basic factuality.
How does fact-checking work at PolitiFact?
At PolitiFact, we take a statement from a politician or an advocacy group or a pundit, and we just look at that statement and we say, is it true or not? We research. We look for original documentation. We look for data, evidence. We talk to experts. Depending on the nature of the statement, it will go to different sources. We lay out all the evidence we find, and then at the end, we put a rating on the statement. And our ratings go from true to mostly true, half true, mostly false, false, and pants on fire. The ratings are to give our readers just a snapshot of where we're coming from. But we lay out all our evidence so that they can read the complete fact check and decide for themselves if they agree with our findings or not. Transparency is hugely important to our process.
Can you explain how what you do at PolitiFact is different from, for example, how a copy editor might approach a story at the New York Times or the Washington Post?
Right. All of our reports are fact checks. So when you read our stories, they basically follow the same format. So-and-so said this, is it true? That's the orientation of all our reports. And we don't give people breaking news or say that this just happened. All of our reports are in this fact-checking framework. Now, places, newspapers like the New York Times, the Washington Post, or people's local newspaper, they're writing reports about events that are happening, and they're checking as they go to make sure that they're reporting everything accurately. But their orientation isn't a deep dive into the evidence the way ours is.
Do you think PolitiFact and the work of fact-checkers needs more transparency to be embraced by Americans?
I think we need to always strive to be more transparent, but I think we're one of the most transparent forms of journalism out there. At PolitiFact, we, in addition to laying out all the evidence as we see it, we also have a source list with hyperlinks, so that people can dig into the evidence for themselves. We have extreme transparency. I do think the media as a whole needs more transparency, and I think that it would do traditional reporting well to be even more transparent, because I do think that that is a good strategy in a skeptical age to show people that we do know what we're talking about. We're not just making assertions and asking people to believe us without evidence. We're supplying all of our evidence. So anything that we can do to increase transparency is a good thing.
Let's bring in Nate now, who joins us with a question from Milwaukee. Hi, Nate. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you. I was calling partly in response to the earlier question of will we still need fact checkers, and that's an easy answer. It is a very large yes. And I also would say that we should still have people fact check even the ridiculous claims, because some people believe them. I remember when a Tea Party relative of mine was trying to explain to me how Obama's birth certificate had somehow been modified. And even if you have somebody, even though if you stop having somebody who's as blatant a liar as the current president, you still got other people out there, like Vicki McKenna has her own radio show, and I've heard her distort the truth to protect her own political allies, like Scott Walker.
Nate, thanks for calling in. Angie, how would you respond?
You know, I get asked from time to time, like, there's so many lies out there, why do you even bother? And I totally agree with your caller that we need fact-checking just for itself. I think that even if nobody listened to fact checkers or cared about fact checking, I just think there's a very important virtue in simply stating the truth in the face of a falsehood, just saying that is not true. And with our journalism, we're noting for the record, we're noting for posterity. There are things that are being said that are not true. And I mean, for me as a journalist, like, I hope it has an impact, but if it doesn't, I would do it anyway, because I do think it's so important in a democracy where we're trying to govern ourselves that we have factual, accurate, vetted evidence so we can make good decisions.
Let's bring in Simmer now, who joins us from Milwaukee. Go ahead, Simmer.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me. A quick question I had regarding fact-checking. I think the media overall does a good job, but the biggest issue we're currently facing is we're so divided that automatically we get put in buckets of left-leaning, right-leaning. So how does fact-checking, you know, how do you stay neutral? Like, that's the biggest thing. Like, you automatically say something is false, then you fall into the category, oh, they don't like Republicans. But if you say something the other way, then you say, oh, you don't like the Democrats.
Simmer, so, great question. Angie, can you broach that?
Yeah, that's a great question. And we've developed a fact-checking method over the past 10 years so that we strive to approach every fact-check the same way. So we come to a statement and we say, let's look for all the things that might show that it's true, and let's look for all the things that might show that it's false. And we work really hard to keep bias out of our work. Because we publish on the internet and we're so active on social media, PolitiFact is on Twitter and on Facebook, we get tremendous amounts of feedback from our readers who are independent-minded, and also, frankly, from partisans. So we are not going to be able to get away with leaving something out or not looking at some part of the evidence. And because of our journalism ethics, we do want to look at everything. And we do want to be able to have a report where people can say, I think PolitiFact is trying to do its best at fact-checking both sides. And if people go to our website, they'll see a diversity of ratings, a diversity of findings. But I think the caller is absolutely right. We do live in a very partisan age, and people want to put each other in buckets. But the truth is, sometimes people that we like are factually incorrect, and sometimes people that we don't like have a point and are actually accurate. So we try to be open-minded to every scenario that's out there.
Angie, there are endless things that you could fact-check. How do you decide where to put your time and your energy and the staff's time and energy? And what you pick also could have repercussions in how people view you.
Well, you hit the nail on the head as to one of our ongoing challenges. We pick things to check based on what we think the average person would hear and say, I wonder if that's true. So we are picking topics that are in the news. We're picking topics that are in the headlines. We do not select a random sample. Sometimes people will say, like, oh, you've got all these false ratings on Donald Trump, but we don't fact check everything he says. We select the things that sound wrong to us. We do have a bias that way, in that we think it's most important to correct information that is wrong. So we're not social science. We're not doing a random sample. If we did do a random sample of politicians' statements, Donald Trump's or any other ones, I think our report would be less compelling, because politicians say a lot of things that are just, you know, basic facts that nobody really disputes. We're trying to use our limited resources. We have about 10 staff members to fact-check the things that are most important, most relevant, most in need of setting the record straight.
In this last minute or so we have with you, I'm wondering, how has technology impacted the work of fact-checkers? Will we get to an era of live fact-checking? And what does computerization have to do with it?
That's a great area for growth for us. We're using automated techniques all the time to get our fact checks done more quickly and in front of audiences while keeping the highest standards of accuracy. One thing that's coming up, the State of the Union at the end of the month, PolitiFact's going to be doing our usual work of fact checking the speech as it's delivered. And the Reporters Lab at Duke University is working on an app that will bring together the work of fact-checkers like PolitiFact and other fact-checkers so that people can have fact-checks delivered to their phone as the speech is ongoing. So that's an area where we're always looking to innovate. And over the years, I've seen rapid change in this area. So we are getting technology to help us do our fact-checks. I do think we'll always need the human journalist to make the final call, but the computers help us work more efficiently and faster.
Angie Holin, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Angie Holin is the editor of PolitiFact, a fact-checking organization that is operated by the Tampa Bay Times. Earlier in the hour, we heard from Alexius Manzarlis and Daniel Funke, both with Pointers International Fact-Checking Network. This hour was produced by Colleen Leahy and Nyasia Ellison. Michelle Johnson is executive producer. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is the Ideas Network.